Welcome to the Three Pillars of D&D cast. This is a YouTube series / podcast that we're setting up to basically explain the three pillars of D&D, which are social interaction, exploration, and combat. And we're going to use those as a model for how we explain classes, different, like, how we do our book reviews, and just, like, a lens for how we view the world of Dungeons & Dragons, basically. And that's the premise of it. So,
yeah.
Hope you enjoy and all that. So, but first, in order to do that, we should explain what those are and what they mean and our interpretations of
them.
And who we are as well, I suppose, huh? So, we'll start with introductions. Start with Tyler.
Hello, I'm Tyler. I'm annoying, I guess. I mean, anyways, my section I decided to explain was the combat side of D&D, because that's the part I know the best. And basically, what to me, the combat side of D&D is, it's like trying to balance and doing the maximum amount of damage while taking the least amount of damage comparatively. So this can be achieved by having a lot of health, or staying in the back, or trying to finish off your opponents as quick as possible. But it's also there's also much strategy in combat too, like abilities and spells to use, position, what types of attacks you use, and there's so much to balance. It's mainly the number crunching side of D&D. Most of it is just calculating numbers and rolling dice. So, players that like that kind of stuff, like math nerds, or they will really like those types of campaigns.
Alrighty, and so if you wanted to make a campaign that focused mostly on combat, what kind of campaign would you do?
More like a Colosseum or a Gladiator, like, thing, where you put it into, like, it's Colosseum, and you either fight for your own survival or to gain riches, and the whole point is to try to, survive and, defeat your opponents.
So, like, that one may have, like, a little social interaction, say, because you might be an entertainer or something like that.
But it wouldn't have much.
But mostly be focused on combat.
Yeah, mostly be focused on enticing combat, Might even be featured for going more head-on than staying in the back.
That is a good example. But what about if you wanted to have one with a party with more people? Do you think that a party and a Colosseum would work, or do you think
it would not work that well? That's more if you want to have the players branch out by themselves, or if you want the players to fight each other.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. That's a good point. All right. So that's good. So that's the part that I think a lot of people know about D&D, right, is the combat. I know when I played, because I played the older editions. I played 2nd edition and 3rd edition. I completely missed 4th. Yeah, because I'm old. But I played in high school when I was in high school. And I played 2nd edition, went into 3rd edition. So that was what I was familiar with. And it was a lot of combat bases. There was a lot of role-playing, social interaction, exploration kind of stuff. My brother happened to be a very good DM, so we got a lot of that. But it was a lot of combat. That's what it was mostly about, was combat. And I think that's how what most people view Dungeons & Dragons for a long time as. And it has more of the video game aspect.
Yeah. And every single class is designed to entice us. I mean, of course, fighters and barbarians And heck, even, like, warlocks and rogues and...
Paladins, even?
Yeah, paladins are meant to more of the fighting side. But every class has its own, you know, every class has combat features.
That's true.
It's meant to, you know, combat. That's, like, the main thing of D&D.
Well, there you go. I mean, take your gladiator example, you know, Colosseum example. You're probably going to want to stick with, like, fighters and maybe rogues. But I'm not sure how well a rogue would do.
It's not a big open area.
Yeah, it's kind of a big open area.
Warlocks actually can be really good.
Really?
Because of Eldritch Blast.
That's a good point.
Teacher?
Alright, what's up?
For people who are new to D&D and stuff, like, can you give us, like, pop culture icons, like, you know, anime or, like, TV show people that would, like, have a lot of combat that's, like, heavily combat-based?
Take the last TV show you watched with a guy with a big sword.
But, like...
like, names!
But, like, Dragon Ball Z, for example?
Yeah, Dragon Ball Z, you know, it's kind of like the... Yeah, Dragon Ball Z, although a lot of D&D isn't about that. Although I guess you could reflavor Eldritch Blast for...
You know. Yeah, I actually, there's a monk path called the Way of the Sun. Soul or whatever. That is basically a Kamehameha. but, yeah, and then, I mean, there's a lot of anime that is basically just fight after fight after fight after fight. That would be an example of a combat heavy campaign.
Sure, Online, that's one. Fairy Tale.
Well, like, yeah, like Naruto, but like, well, you could definitely come up with a lot of the social interaction on those shows too, like Inuyasha the same way. So, how does combat pertain to character development?
Combat can pertain to character development. It can cause, you know, some people have a vendetta or, a promise or something to make the world a better place. They might hack and slash monsters to help people, or maybe they just want to get stronger as a warrior, or heck, sometimes combat can be a negative but required thing on the character and can cause, you know, quirks in the character that didn't exist before, like heightened paranoia, and, you know, wanting to be armed at all times because they've experienced the horrors of combat, you know, pain and the suffering that they've inflicted on themselves and they've inflicted on others.
And happiness in unicorns! Sorry, that was getting, dramatic.
So I just gave this, like, very intricate and, like, very philosophical answers to this combat question, and I was just like, and unicorns!
Well, it was getting dark, I'm
combat
sorry!
Combat gives your character that sense of fulfillment, like, a job well done, accomplishing a goal.
Yeah.
Too. Like, you know, like, that's the moments where a lot of characters get that hero moment, is combat.
Yeah, so, they're getting more experience on how to go across this world.
There you go. Yes. I mean, speaking of which, when it comes to D&D and doing experience, combat is the easiest one. It's quantified very easily in the Monster's Manual. And, you know, any stat block generally has experience that they recommend giving to your player. It is the easiest one to come up with when it comes to experience.
And if you're looking for experience for the other parts of D&D, I recommend going to the Arnas Arcana Replayer Experience page, where it gives some more, advice of how to award experience for, social interaction and exploration.
There you go.
I just got so many vibes of just, like, you're just plugging it or something.
Dumpstat
actually has a wonderful article about giving experience on encounters, like making your environment and your social interaction into encounters that you can give experience to as well. So I would recommend going to Dumpstat and looking for their article on that too. It's very good.
That's how you sell out, Emma.
Exactly. All right. Well, I'm Jesse. I'm the dad here. As we mentioned earlier, I'm old.
Old.
So I'm going to go by exploration. Exploration is probably the hardest thing to quantify in Dungeons & Dragons, and probably the hardest campaign to base something around, I think, for most people. Exploration is everything from, you know, traveling through the woods from town to town, you know, going into dungeons and discovering it and finding the traps and disarming them and things like that.
Exploration is what happens between the social interaction, between the combat.
But like, but exploration like is anything from, you know, searching rooms to discover the clue, and say if you're a detective kind of story, to like jumping into your dungeons. And discovering the traps or figuring out the puzzles and things like that, to, you know, like, you know, going to the woods and let's see, what else is there? You know, walking through the desert, you know, all these kind of things, but like, they're really, it's hard to quantify exactly what exploration is, but it's the part as a DM, you're going to be the part where you're explaining everything to the players, the world they see. It's the world building. It's the story that's happening all around the players, mm-hmm. Where they're not talking to the people and stuff like that. I mean, obviously, the class that epitomizes exploration is the ranger. I mean, you can choose to be a ranger of any of the terrains that you might explore in the world, and that's obvious. But then you have the rogue, to a certain degree, is also about exploration. They're the ones who can pick your locks. They have the best stealth. They can do you know, all kinds of stuff like that really let them, like, their perception and insight help them discover things about the world and explore it in their own way. They're like, I mean, in a way, the rogues are kind of like the city rangers, but not, you know, like
the goth.
Yeah,
the goth rangers.
There's all kinds of different kinds of ways to interpret the rogue. I mean, your fighter doesn't seem like they would explore that much, but without exploring, the fighter has nothing to do in most campaigns. Like, that's how you get your fighter to the place where they start hacking and slashing things. So it is important. So, I mean, exploring could even be as far as like finding the secret information in a library. You know, like there's a lot of ways to interpret exploration. So, question.
What type of, do you have a cat type of campaign you would do? Like a lot of exploring.
I would. I'd make it up maybe like a survival campaign, like a post-apocalyptic survival campaign where you're like, the world has come to ruin and you're exploring the wasteland that's left and trying to figure out how you can feed yourself and figuring out maybe even what happened to the world. Maybe you don't know. That could be an example.
So
there's a lot of games that explore that. Okay, so character development and exploration. So that is a harder one, but because like I said, exploration is just hard in general. But the characters exploring this world and everything is kind of the whole thing in a way. Like it's like one of the major things you can really, really feel like if your characters are going into the Feywild, for example, and the Feywild is really crazy and there's just, it's just a whole different kind of world and their moralities are completely different than the evil good scale that we as, you know, regular people see the world generally. That can help develop the characters quite a bit because they've seen a whole different way of viewing the world. And like the Feywild, for example, is just very visual way of doing it. So that kind of exploration can change them. I mean, going down like say a rapids, like a crazy whitewater rapids in your boat and barely surviving it, that's not really a combat, but it's a life and death situation. So it's that kind of exploration can change how the characters view the world and how they can do things as well. So
you're saying it gives him a higher sense of perspective?
Yeah.
Maybe? You know, knowing...
And a higher sense of purpose, too.
Yeah, a higher sense of purpose. Or, heck, it could... Or to some characters, it can lower their sense of purpose. Because, like, well, if there's so many other people, I can't affect that much.
But at the same time, you can have a character that, because they've experienced this world and all the people in it, and all the things they've seen, the creatures... They might want to save it more if the big bad guy is coming to destroy the world or something.
Yeah.
They might, like, because they've experienced the world, they want to save the world.
Yeah, it can help give them a motive.
Yeah, that can be enough to motivate a character. So, yeah, and like, what is a good example of an exploration? And like, it's hard, like, I'm trying to think about... A lot of Disney movies do a really good job of showing you the world that they care about.
It's much easier to show than tell a world.
Yeah. And so I thought, like, we've done Sword Art Online, for example, because it has a good blend of all three of them. It does a pretty good job. All right, welcome to the sellout break, where we plug our stuff, and if we had sponsors, we plug them.
We don't.
But we don't. So, if you want to get a hold of us on social media, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at Our Dorky. Instagram is...
at Our Dorky Family.
And then we have an email as well at OurDorkyFamily@gmail.com if you want to get a hold of us about... sponsorship, or just ask us questions, anything like that.
Distance.
Exactly. And stay tuned for our next episode, where we're going to be discussing The Monk, and we'll be going over three of the subclasses as well, making characters for them, and kind of showing the different aspects of the Monk character. All right, we'll see you next time.
Bye! Hi, I'm Emma, and I don't have anything to say about myself, so we're going to move on. I'm the one who's doing roleplay, like social interactions. I do it a lot in my campaigns. I'm DM a lot, too. Social interaction and roleplaying is all about, like, the accents, who the characters are, and how you're explaining it. It's your character development type column. I'm getting these weird looks, so I assume this is not what they expect me to say. Let's roll with it.
Just keep going.
It's a lot about how... It's hard to phrase. Which is weird, because... words.
It's about your interaction with particular people,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's about your interaction with the people of the world. Like... NPCs, the big bad guy, your other teammates, it's your interactions with things around.
Or even just the blacksmith or the butcher or whatever.
I said NPCs, Dad.
Well, I know, but...
Non-player characters, NPCs.
Yeah. But there are all kinds of NPCs.
There's a lot of different ones. There's, you know, the mothers, the children, the people who buy and sell, and the traders. That's the word. I'm having troubles. I think that's it. I want questions. Give me questions. I do better with questions than just talking.
Alright.
You mentioned character development. How do you think it does affect character development? You mentioned it, but you didn't go into it.
I hate your philosophical questions. Okay. Character development. Well, at the beginning of a campaign, especially if you've never played before, you can kind of grasp that you don't really... I'm assuming this, like, people who's going to watch this either don't know what the pillars are, or are people who are newly trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
That's what I'm assuming based on this. If you know this, I'm sorry. But, people who've never played before don't really have a sense of who their characters are right away. They kind of can just
play it out after one session, which is why session zero is always nice. But they kind of have to play out their character for a long time, and people who have played before can get a sense of, my character has gone through this, so they act like this. But over time, like, as you play that character, as you make friendships with your other players, with your other people, your team, your character changes, evolves, like, maybe they get over their past. Maybe the big bad guy is somebody from their past and they have to go kill them. It changes how they, like, the players change how they view their characters, so their characters change as well.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that was weird. I don't like it.
That was actually a very interesting point of view, and it focused more on the players than the characters, which I thought was interesting.
Exactly. So then, okay, so if you were making a campaign that was going to, and you have made campaigns, what are examples of campaigns that are mostly socially based, not combat or exploration as much?
Well, there's a few I can think of. I'm just going to plug our YouTube channel real quick. I don't know if you guys can get to a podcast. Our Dorky Family has my campaign on it. That's a lot of roleplay basing. It's called New Olympia. There's a lot of roleplaying in there. You meet characters. I even play a player character. I would do something based around that. New Olympia, for those of you who don't know, is very modern. Modern world who is getting reintroduced to magic after losing it for years and millennia. It has the Greek gods in there, because I like those and I know those lore better.
And to tie the social interaction in,
yeah.
Your gods are interact with
the
characters.
Like, you know, you get god interaction with the characters and other people technically, but you don't see it. Another campaign, because I think I should explore this more, because I do have another campaign I want to talk about real quick, is my campaign that I'm doing for a different group of people. It's all about, like, four different god groups, the Norse god, the Greek god, the Egyptian gods, and the Roman gods, all trying to live in harmony in a world. And there my players have done a lot of social interaction, which is, like, other gods trying to figure out, because they don't remember who they are, and, like, trying to figure out who they are and have, like, a lot of social interaction with, like, the kids of towns that they have to save, of, like, the adults that they saved.
Do you think social interaction could help with the motive or even change the motive of the character?
Oh, I have a perfect example!
Okay.
In another campaign, I'm talking about three different campaigns. It's going great. I DM a lot, if you cannot tell.
So if you're confused, so are we.
Shut up. I'm bad at this. Alright.
Okay, so example.
I had to get a player character killed because they don't want to play that character anymore, and I don't like making my players forcibly play a character for story. So it got to the point where I had the big bad guy introduce himself finally, and it got to where I was playing him, and my players got so angry at the big bad guy that they ignored their actual mission to go get something and are not trying to track this guy down. They had so much social interaction with the big bad guy that they immediately hated him. You can change your motives. Like, this motive of this character was to just, you know, exist again. And now they just want to go kill somebody because they killed their sister. It's great.
Well, yeah, like, in the campaign I'm running, social interaction made a bigger character. Mm-hmm. One that I was using, like, I had them go to a tavern, and they were supposed to just kind of go there and meet the captain of the ship they were supposed to go on.
And
ended up doing this big, like, musical performance, like, helping the guy on stage with his musical performance and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the interactions between that character and theirs became a big part of the scene. Well, I didn't plan that at all.
Oh,
like, I didn't think that they would do that. Had no idea. And so the character ended up being important, you know, like, and he'll come up now probably again later in the adventure.
I love her!
Because he was you know, he was just a minstrel. But now, like, because of the big show they put on and stuff like that, people will talk about it. So he's going to be more important now. And so, like, that was the whole thing where the social interaction made the character more important, even though they weren't intended to be important.
Oh, that was my favorite.
So
he was so nice.
That was fun. And so that was one way that social interaction can change the dynamic of the story in its own way. It was supposed to be a bit of exploration and social interaction with a different character that turned into social action with more characters. It was very fun.
Social interaction is my favorite thing to do.
And
my favorite thing, DM, it's my favorite thing to do. I make my players do a lot of talking to each other in the game. I make my players talk to the merchants instead of just saying, I want to buy this, and I just do it. I make them talk. It's something that's very vital to D&D that not a lot of people know. And a lot of DMs and a lot of players skip over it, and I don't think that should happen. That's my very personal opinion. I'm about to put my heart on stage. God, I hate my life. like, your players, for DMs, people who want to DM, your players should want to talk with the people in this world. Your players should want to just know what's going on instead of just saying, I'm going to buy this. All right, cool. You want your players to be able to talk to the others. And having players who can't talk is interesting because the other players try to, you know, get them to talk. It makes for very good teamwork, especially with people who've never played together before. You create bonds, you create, you know, friends. It's a very important part of D&D.
Well, and that's, well, as designed by 5th edition. Like, that's what they, I think that's really what Wizards of the Coast was shooting for, was to have more of that social interaction, more of that exploration on top of the combat.
Yeah, and one way to use it is sometimes players want to do tasks more because there's an NPC they like.
Yeah, like if a player gets attached to an NPC, then they're just going to be like, well, I want to save this NPC. And now all of a sudden you got to play this NPC all the time. But you got to get them to like this fun thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're all intertwined. That's kind of the beauty of, like, I think a good campaign is a good blend of all three, obviously. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'd enjoy, say, a Colosseum campaign as much. Now, I might enjoy a section of the campaign that took place in the Colosseum, for example, like a game session or two that was in the arena, like, because we needed to win or to get some item to save somebody or whatever.
And it has to be a very interesting one-shot, especially battling players. And, you know, and because of the support classes, there can even be dynamics where, like, you pay off the cleric to heal you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and you can have, and you can set up, I mean, like that, if you're having players going against each other, if I'd had an even number of players, I would have them like teams, like maybe groups of two or something like that, who would go in, maybe they mix it up and they do different combats and they could see how they work with each other.
Yeah, how they work with each other and against each other.
But yeah, and then like, and I would like ham up the whole Colosseum part and make the performance and the entertaining part, which are normally social interaction mm-hmm. skills, part of the combat.
Yeah. Anyways, but, yeah, that's the three pillars of D&D. Do you guys have anything else you want to add?
Well, I thought we go over what skills you think are pertain to each of the three pillars the most.
Skills are most prevalent for combat is athletics, acrobatics, sometimes intimidation, sometimes stealth. That's really it, though.
Okay, so you want to
So I can see that. When it comes to exploration, there's actually a lot more skills for exploration. Perception, survival, obviously, stealth. What else is there? I don't have a list in front of me of the skills.
Yeah, I'm just going to pull up the cover sheet for all this.
Yeah.
I'll point out some. Exploration,
Nature, Arcana. Religion. They're about the skills that really pertain to exploration.
What's religion exploration?
Because it's knowledge about religion.
Okay.
So it can help you in your exploration of things. Investigation, yeah, that's a good one. And then there's the tools, of course, as well. I always kind of forgot about tools. But those are things you're proficient in as well. And those can affect a lot of your inspiration about maybe crafting things or picking locks when it comes to...
Yeah, disguise kits,
yeah. Use tools. Disguise kits are a very social interaction.
Ah!
Yeah, and there's a lot of skills for social interactions, such as, let's see here, we have deception, insight, persuasion.
Animal handling,
yeah. Because, I mean, it is. You don't really think of it that way, but it really is.
History, intimidation, investigation.
Yeah, I mean, medicine. A lot of the things that are in exploration are necessary to interact with other people. But, yeah,
Performance,
especially. That's a very heavy one. And, of course, intimidation, yeah. Sleight of hand, that's a very social interaction kind of skill.
Well, stealth can sometimes be used to avoid social interaction. It can also sometimes be the catalyst of social interaction, like if you're caught.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, yeah, I mean, exactly. So they all kind of blend together. Like, we'll take... Because you've seen a lot of Naruto, right? Or maybe Inuyasha might be a better one.
Inuyasha.
We watch all of Inuyasha. So Inuyasha has a lot of the social interaction between Inuyasha, Kagome,
the other characters.
And the other main party members. So there's a lot of that. And then, they always go into these very combat-heavy situations. And Inuyasha likes to use the method where they introduce a bad guy, Inuyasha, you know, attempts to cut them in half with the wind scar, and then we get this really long backstory that might be an episode or two long about why the bad guy is a bad guy and their motivations for everything like that. And so there's a lot of, that's kind of exploration in its own way because we're just learning about the character's past. And that tells us a little more about the world of Inuyasha. And, you know, you learn a lot about that. There's demons in that world. You learn, you know, like it takes place in feudal Japan. So there's a lot of that going on and what the world looks like and things like that. And it's based on, semi-based on, the real world, feudal Japan, but obviously with demons and magic and stuff. But... I mean, I think Inuyasha actually would be a fairly interesting campaign. If you were to run it, I wouldn't try to run Inuyasha, but, you know, if you made a campaign that was kind of like Inuyasha, that would be an interesting D&D campaign.
Yeah, based on Japanese legend, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's basically, so taking something in the real world and then, turning it into a magical world in its own right.
Magic!
It's fun, you know, and so that's a lot of it. So, yeah, that's either way. That's the three pillars. We're gonna kind of go through and talk about characters, character classes in particular is probably we're gonna start first, and we're gonna talk about how the three pillars apply to that class, and then examples of subclasses that epitomize those three pillars really well. And how those subclasses utilize the three pillars. So
fun.
That's good. That's gonna be the general idea of this particular cast. So I hope you want to join us on our adventure, basically, and
pillars.
See how you guys think of the three pillars of D&D. So
yeah.
See you next time.
Bye.
Something to say?
No.
Oh, you're just interrupting.
No, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I was just trying to
Okay, I think we explored exploration enough. Let's go to silly little trash.
All right. So come on.
Okay, I'm Emma.
Centric.
I'm the only one who can talk to people in this group.
Which means it's funny because you can't see the top of the camera.
Oh, I get nervous. All right,
so start over.
Hi. No. I can't. I'm sorry. It's weird.
Welcome to Realms of Peril and Glory, an all-new actual play podcast.
There are guided tours once a week. Come on, Dark Brennan.
How about you, you filthy timepiece?
RPG is home to hilarious stories.
The thing that kicks off a really good tale is...
When they take their tops off.
Sorry?
When you're reading, like... Don't worry.
And thrilling adventures.
There's bad guys, there's an ogre. Probably best if you stay here. Sorry, I'll be back soon.
Why am I tied up?
That was your sibling, not me. Bye.
Each season is an all-new actual play story told collaboratively at the table, featuring guest players from the Magnus Archives.
I remember being in the water, and that was awful. And now I'm not in the water, and that's... much better.
Wooden overcoats.
I am a snowman. I have one job, and that is to stand in place. I was doing that very well.
Yes, and she might come back 9 times more powerful with lots of food and kippers.
We fix space junk.
On the surface, you might look different, but you're very, very similar inside. And I can vouch for that.
And more.
What I am about to tell you stays in this room. Got it?
You don't have to know where there's, like, secret plans about meat and smoothies.
Ducks? Did you say ducks? Did you say duck?
You can find Realms of Peril and Glory wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're gonna have a good laugh, then we're gonna possibly cry, and then we'll grab dinner.